Welcome back to the Jasmine Star Show. I could not be, and I say this every time, I say I'm so excited, but every time it gets up a little bit more and then a little bit more, a little bit more. And today we are not going to let you down with the one, the only Jocelyn Moore. Now I have to say, I did it. My mentor, Susan, calls her Jocelyn. And I was like, is Jocelyn or Jocelyn? Okay, Jocelyn Moore. Now you see, I had to say it twice so you don't forget it. Y'all, I'm intrigued with this woman's story because I had to do a little bit of back research. I did my dues and I'm intrigued with her journey. And more than anything, last night at dinner, I had the opportunity to sit with her and find a fellow comrade in saying, we're going to change the game and we're going to change the game by way of exposure, by way of education, and by way of dismantling the previous system that has traditionally kept a few people out. And on that note, Jocelyn, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. Your energy is infectious.
Well, I had to match yours because last night we're at dinner and we're sitting out on the dock and you come in and it was like heads turned to you. You just walked and it was just Gone with the Wind Fabulous. You walked past tables and I was like, we just felt this.
Oh,
and so I knew I had to bring my A-game.
Well, I was coming to see you, so I had to bring my A-game.
That's right. If you don't mind, I'm going to read a little bit of your bio because I want to set the stage. So you are a startup advisor, a C-suite strategist, and basically an all-around incredible reputation builder. I wanted to get those words right.
Thank you.
Those are words that I would use based on the research that I have done. But if I was meeting you in an elevator and we had about four floors to go down, what do you tell people you do?
I say I'm an executive strategist because that's what I spent my career doing and advising CEOs. I've advised members of Congress. I work for four senators. And I continue to advise entrepreneurs and cool people all around the world. So it's a fun life, I have to say. I feel very privileged to be able to live it.
Mm. So normally on the podcast, because I'm an avid podcast listener, and the way that most podcasts start will say, let's start with your origin story. And I like to flip the script a little bit on this podcast because I want to, first and foremost, set the table for what we're going to deliver. I want to know what are people going to be expecting in this? But I think in this particular case, you have done such incredible things in your career that without kind of sharing a little bit of the backstory, it might seem way too much for somebody. So I'm going to go against what I normally do, but I want to start off with the main mission and why I want to have this conversation. Okay. Last night at dinner, I told you that what I see you doing is so incredible. And it seems like you're the black unicorn.
Oh, right? Wow. I like that. Can we trademark that?
Yeah, blackunicorn.com. So you're sitting on boards and you have your own business. And you, while you're not quite Olivia Pope, does anybody ever?
This is quite, yes, I hear this so frequently, the Olivia Pope, and it's an honor to be compared to Olivia Pope.
Okay.
I love it. I'll take it.
Yeah. I see these things and this idea that you are able to sit on board and you are able to speak up and on behalf and shape. And I'm like, I want a piece of that. And I don't even know what exactly it is I want because I know nothing about boards. But I made a commitment when I started this podcast that I'm going to share what I know. So for people who want to know how do specifically underrepresented people, people of color, women, underrepresented genders, how do they get to be in a place that is ultimately shaping public companies? But before we get there, you kind of went in like a non-traditional path to get where you are. You're like, okay, I served on Senate. Da, da, da. I was like, wait. Okay, like I know, but let's start.
And not trying to say it in a, you know,
you
in
did
that
it.
Kind
no,
of way.
No, but, honey, I would know. Be like, so it was four times. Did you hear that? Four times.
I love that voice.
Okay. Let's start though. Let's start with how did you start shaping this journey to be where you are?
Absolutely. So it starts in Atlanta, Georgia, which is where I'm from. And I grew up, I have two brothers, two sisters, and I always envisioned doing something different. What that was not defined in my, young life, but I went to college at the University of Florida, go Gators. And that was really a transformative moment in my life. So I served in student government. I was a student body vice president. And at the University of Florida, we run, we make campaign speeches, we have to raise money. It's a real thing. And at the time, we had about 44,000 students on campus that we were trying to convince to vote for us.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You had to raise funds?
You did.
Well, can we talk there? Because that's the start of your business savvy. Did you know that? Like you're getting people to give you a dollar. The minute somebody gives you a dollar,
I didn't until you just said it. I didn't even think about it that way. It really for me was the start of connecting with people on a different level, right? And learning how to say, this is who I am. This is why you should believe in what I'm doing. And that's where I learned it. And It was phenomenal. Okay. Phenomenal. And at that point, I was like, oh my goodness, I've got to go work in the seat of power. Politics, like, it lights me up. If you talk to me for any period of time and the conversation turns to politics, you can just see. I'm like, I'm immediately launching, right? So after I left UF, I drove my little Corolla up to Washington. I didn't have a job. My background, I was getting a master's in education. I thought I was going to work in student affairs. So I drove up to Washington because I was like, I have to be in the seat of power. This thing, I don't know what it is. I don't really understand it, but I just want to be around it. So I moved to DC. I camped out with my sorority sister on her couch. It was the year 2000. They were doing the census. She was going door to door. So I would just go in the summer to make sure someone was with her. She wasn't by herself. I worked at the mall.
What store? Let's paint the story.
Well, I worked at Ann Taylor.
You remember Ann Taylor? That is so DC.
I had to have those suits outfits to get ready for my eventual job. I was at Ann Taylor.
Okay.
Loved it.
Okay.
And I didn't have a job, but then Zell Miller, who had been governor in Georgia, got appointed to the Senate. So my mom calls and my mom says, oh my goodness, the governor is going to be a senator. You've got to go work for the governor. And that's what she always called him, the governor. He'd been, you know, elected to Senate or appointed to the Senate at that time, the governor. And I was like, Mom, you do know there are a lot more people that want to work on the Hill. He's not just going to hire me because I'm from Georgia. And she's like, of course he will. Once he meets you, of course he's going to hire you. Well, my mom, you will find, is often right. And so I applied because I was from Georgia, right place, right time, ready to hit the ground running. I was hired. And so from there, I worked in the Senate 15 years for four senators, starting with my home state senator.
But what did you do?
Oh, I did a few things. So I started out as a lowly, you know, legislative correspondent answering phones. But that's how I got to learn the issues, because people, our constituents in Georgia, would call in and they'd tell us exactly what they were thinking. That connection point, again, to people, that's what it's always a connection to people, really helped me learn. Here's what is important to Georgians. And so I went on and I became a legislative assistant. Then I went to work for the senior senator from Florida, Bob Graham, who I knew. He's also a Gator. I worked for him for a few years. He ran for president. That didn't work out. His best friend in the Senate was Jay Rockefeller, who's from the New York Rockefellers, but represented West Virginia. And my favorite person in all the world. I went to work for him for 9 years. So I was his legislative assistant. I led all of his health reform efforts. And then I became his legislative director. And so he broke my heart and retired in 2013. And I thought I was going to leave the Senate at that time. But Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon came calling. He was transitioning.
See, that's when you know you're good. Well, you try leaving.
I tried leaving and they didn't call you back.
Okay.
I was ready. Oh, my goodness. But I had a little bit more in me, and he was going to be the incoming chair of the Finance Committee, which, you know, that was a big deal. The Finance Committee and a committee working on issues like healthcare, taxes, trade, all the things. So I really wanted to go over and help him get ready to be the chairman of the committee. So I was his deputy staff director. Working in his office, and it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. So I did that for a couple of years and then went to the private sector. And none of this is planned, right? My life has written, my steps are ordered. I really do believe that. I believe, you know, I'm incredibly blessed. And so I left the Hill and went to go work at a lobbying shop. Hadn't really envisioned that. Sounded like a good thing. One of my mentors convinced me that that was the next step. And so I did that. And it was awesome.
Hold on. Yeah. Last night at dinner, you had said that you were going, and we're not going to get into specifics, because last night we didn't get into specifics, but there was something that happened about somebody drawing something on a napkin. Is this at that moment?
Yes, this is at that moment.
Okay, can we go back to that story?
Absolutely.
I feel like it's really important, because I think that of the creeping I did of you on the internet, and I am a creeper, there's been a pattern in your life of people who step in and pour into you, and then you're creating a network, and then you're paying it forward. And so there is like this underlying current that I kind of want to see, like, how is this all connected? Is it duplicatable? Let's go back. You are going to go into the private sector.
Yeah.
You know that this is a lucrative opportunity, and you know that you need to advocate for yourself.
Yes.
But where do you begin? Let's go there real quick.
And if I could, Jasmine, let me take it even a further step back.
Please.
So when I went to work for Zell Miller, I'd known Senator Graham, as I mentioned. I knew the lobbyist for the University of Florida because I went there and was in student government. So the job for Zell Miller, Senator Miller, didn't just happen just because I was from Georgia, right place at right time. Senator Graham made a call on my behalf, as did the head lobbyist for the University of Florida. So I would just say to the audience, relationships, you never know. You never know who's going to step up and advocate on your behalf. whether you expect it or not, which leads me to the next story. So when I went to go to the private sector, I was negotiating my contract, right? I'd never negotiated a contract. I'd always worked in the government. So I said to a friend who ran her own firm, I was like, you know, how do I negotiate this? Like, I have an idea of what I should be paid, but I'm not entirely sure. There's been no like role model to model right. this for me. So I'm coming to you. And
so let's pause.
Yes.
There's somebody who's listening who has been given an opportunity and they don't know how to frame the opportunity. And so you did a courageous thing by admitting and being vulnerable. I don't know this, so I'm going to go to you because I trust you to help me.
Okay. I trust you and I've seen you. Like, I know that you are successful. I've seen what you've done with your own business. Mm. You're a strong woman. You're amazing. And if you know anything about me, and I just alluded to this, so I've worked for Democrats. This woman, her name is Linda Tarplin, and I want to give her all of her flowers because she's amazing. She is a Republican, and she runs this firm in Washington, consulting firm, very successful. Linda sat me down, and she's going to remember this moment. She wrote on a napkin, here are the things you need to think about as you negotiate this contract. Mm. And it was like 4 boxes of things. And she was like, on this issue, you need to do X. On this issue, you need to do Y. And here's the range of the salary you should be asking for based on your expertise and experience. And she took it a step further. If you need help as you're negotiating this, here is my business attorney. And I'm going to connect you with him so he can get you through all of the specifics. And that's what she did. He's been my business attorney ever since that moment. And, you know, we're almost 10 years since.
Mm. So I'm going to like leap pad a little. Like, that negotiation and contract worked out definitely in your favor.
Oh, it did. It worked out. It was pretty good. I was very happy with
it. How long
it.
Were you there?
I was there about 10 months, and not because anything terrible happened. So when I went to Glover Park Group, which is what it was called, it's now, it has a different name. When I went there, I was not on the National Football League account, but I kept getting called in because they had health and safety issues, which, you know, people know about if they are following the National Football League. So I kept getting called in on their account. I was working with, you know, their top lobbyist. Well, their top lobbyist ended up going to another job at Apple. And at that time, my mentor and manager at Glover Park, he calls me into his office. Now, this is a crazy story. Joel and I would meet, like, he'd just come plop down in my office, or actually he called me into the conference room, sorry. Or I go plop down in his office. He's like, well, let's meet in the conference room. And I was like, oh boy, this sounds like I'm in trouble. Not sure why I'm in trouble, but it sounds like I'm in trouble. So he calls me into the conference room. We go sit down. And I was like, oh my goodness, what's going on? And he's like, you know, there's this NFL job. I really think that you should apply for it. I think you should go out for it and we will support you. Like, cause we think that you are the person for this job. You've done a tremendous job here. You know all of their issues. You should apply for the job. My response was, Joel, I just left the Hill and I'm not on my BlackBerry. I still have my BlackBerry, love my BlackBerry, 24/7. So I have some work-life balance, and I don't believe in work-life balance, but this is in my youth.
Didn't know any better.
Right, when I didn't know any better. And I'm like,
10 months in and you're exactly, like, oh, I understand.
Balance. Okay. I know what it is. Long story short, I said to him, okay, Joel, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call my mom. If she thinks it's a good idea, then we'll talk about it. Now, normally I would call my dad, and this isn't in any, you know, gender-specific way, but my dad is a huge sports fan. My mom is a sports fan, but less so. And she would always give me advice that was more attuned to, here's what you should do as my daughter, you know, follow your dreams. So I call her and tell her what's going on. 2 seconds flat, this is what she says. Well, Jocelyn, I don't really see what the problem is. Like, you have one amazing job that you love, and you're going to go interview for this other amazing job. If you don't get it, you just come back to the job that you love. And I was like, Mom, I could have called Dad for that. That's literally what I said. And I said, now I have to go and, like, interview because that's what you said. I thought you were going to say you should follow your dreams. And if you have work-life balance, that's what you should do. And she's like, oh, no, 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 no. You should totally go interview for this job. So long story, I ended up interviewing for it. And I got the job, became the top lobbyist for the NFL. And again, people advocating on my behalf across the board, which is really, really quite remarkable.
Mm. So that seems like we're breaking up in chapters. So we start with the collegiate chapter, the Hill chapter, and then the lobby NFL chapter kind of got like we got a twofer there.
Because
10 yes. months moving yes. into this new position. After the NFL, what is happening in your life?
Sure.
Because one of the things that Susan had said is that you embody the ability, heart, soul, and mind to be able to make decisions. And you connect disparate ideas and you create a thought an action plan. And so I just want to kind of articulate, what are the skill sets that you're picking up along this kind of like myriad of a journey? So after the NFL, sure, where do we go?
So Susan is so great and is just really a prescient person. And having her say that, you know, sometimes we don't see in ourselves right, what other people see in
yes,
us. One of the things I know I can do, and I had to do it on the Hill, and I do it every day in my job, I take vast amounts of information. So if you ask me, going back to your question, what do? Mm. So I deal in information and relationships. That's what I do. I'm an executive strategist. I'm a comm strategist. I take enormous amounts of information on a daily basis, and I'm scanning that information for, you know, how do I advise my clients? Is there something I need to know to, you know, better my background or education on an issue? My relationships, those are like, you know, sacred to me, and they've led to this wonderful life that I have. And so it's been amazing to kind of be able to do all of those things. And so after the NFL, again, relationships, and this was completely serendipitous. So I left the NFL. I decided I was going to dip my toe into the venture capital space, knowing nothing about it. I just said, hey, I want to be in venture capital. So what I do is I stalk people on LinkedIn. And mm-hmm, during COVID, it has become a great democratization of access, right?
That's true.
Any person true, that I reach out to on LinkedIn, to a person, responds. And so I'd reached out to this gentleman who was starting his own venture capital firm. He was a friend of a friend. So we were like connected to the third degree.
Okay.
Then my friend introduced us. So I signed on as a venture partner. He was working on getting funding for diverse founders. And so that was like right up my alley. Yes, okay, I want to be a part
of it. So this is 2020?
I want to learn VC. Yes, okay, 2020. Want to learn VC. So I start doing that. And one of his partners is this amazing woman. She lives in Paris. So she recommends me for a board opportunity. She heard from her friend, Roberta. Roberta's Sydney, lives in Boston and is amazing. I'm going to give her a shout out as well. So I get connected to Roberta. I talk to Roberta. This board opportunity really isn't a good fit. And I do want to emphasize the importance of saying no, because there are so many opportunities and sometimes you feel like there's pressure to say yes. This one, not a good fit. And I said, you know, Roberta, I really appreciate it, but this isn't, you know, I don't think this is something that I want to do. Board opportunity.
So this is your first board opportunity.
Yes, yes.
And you're saying no.
Yes, because I didn't think it was a good fit.
Wow.
For my skill set and what I'm interested in and passionate about. It was in like the transportation sector.
Okay, but so, can we pause for a second?
We can.
Because there is somebody listening. I want to make sure that all of us are getting the same amount, if not more, sure, from this story. So there's somebody who's listening. Can you explain sitting on a board and the role that a board plays like I'm 5 years old? Because
oh, yeah,
I want to understand, like, this is an important and a powerful space. And
absolutely,
so let's democratize what you know about boards
absolutely,
to a listener.
So sitting on boards, and again, my background, I would have never imagined sitting on boards. And so it is really the seat at the table. We're sitting at this table here. It is a seat at the table for corporate entities. So I serve on two public boards, and public boards are boards that have stocks traded on either the New York Stock Exchange or one of the exchanges, and so, or NASDAQ, and a private board, which is not a public company. So it's purely, you know, private investor owned. It hasn't gone public, not IPO'd, anything like that. So two public boards, DraftKings and OppFi, private board, Omaze. So when I joined the board of DraftKings, and I'm going to come back to that story of how I got there. When I joined the board of DraftKings, it was my first board, right? And at that time, when I started, they'd just gone public. I led.
I feel like I want to pause though.
Yes, please.
Your first board seat is for DraftKings.
It is.
A public company.
Yeah.
And so there's so many people who are vying for board seats. Now, what is the importance of the board? What decisions are they making? Is there like the structure of power? What,
yes.
Can you explain that?
Sure. So it's really like executive strategy on steroids. So you have the folks who are the funders, like leading funders for the board who may still be on the board. Mm. Then you have the folks who are like captains of industry. So DraftKings, we have folks from movies, from media, from all sorts of, because we're an entertainment and media company. So we have people from all walks of sports and film and every aspect of media and business. And we really advise the CEO, the founders, the executive team from that executive level, that experience level, saying, hey, you should think about this. And then my unique vantage point, because I've worked in government for so long, when you're in a highly regulated industry, which both of my boards are, so DraftKings is regulated.
Interesting. Yes. Your girl just got caught up. Oh, highly regulated industries.
So government.
And your, okay.
So that's the nexus. So it's the highly regulated industries. DraftKings is regulated in every state. And so that means I, as a board member, have to be regulated in every state. But more importantly, I understand the regulatory dynamic, federal government, state government, and otherwise, that the company is facing on a daily basis. And so that's value that I bring to the board. Also, as a executive strategist and a comm strategist, I bring that to the board as well. But the board really is, we are not the operators of the company. We're there for strategic advice and counsel. We're there to help the founders, the CEO, the executive leadership team see around corners and use our expertise to do that. But also we use our expertise and relationships to help build bridges, to help with contacts. And so again, information and relationships.
Your network. Back.
Yes. Those are the things that I deal in.
Okay. So we're now at the point of the story where you're interested or you'd never thought about sitting on a board.
No.
You were
no.
given an opportunity in the transportation sector and then you just know yourself well enough.
I just knew it wasn't.
It's just like, yes, it's, this is not my train.
Right, right. Wasn't my train. And I, you know, and again, I still was grappling with, well, what does it even mean to be on a board? And we're in this moment. And keep in mind, we're post George Floyd, right? So there's this moment where everyone is saying, and I'm going to come back to the saying versus the doing, saying, you know, we want to improve access on corporate boards. We want to improve access in corporate America across, you know, all industries. And so it was really that moment in which I got on my first board seat. But I want people to be very clear, because sometimes I get asked the question, you know, you're in this moment, so do you feel like you got on the board of DraftKings because of all that was happening post George Floyd? No, 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 no. Mm-hmm. I helped lead the sports betting strategy for the National Football League. So I'm on the board of DraftKings because I understand sports betting very well and from a strategic lens. And so that's what the CEO and the board was looking for. So going back to Roberta, I say no to that opportunity. So Roberta then says, and it's always just like Linda said with the attorney, Roberta then says, well, I understand this may not be a good opportunity, but I'm going to connect you with my friend Alana Wolf. Do you know who Alana Wolf is?
No.
And I'm going to give her her flowers, one of my favorite people. Alana is at Goldman Sachs. She is the person that leads their effort, and they announced this in 2020, to diversify all the boards of their portfolio companies to make sure they had at least one woman, but also go far beyond that. So this is Alana. So I get a call. Again, I don't know Roberta. I don't know Alana. But Roberta sets me up with Alana. So I have this call with Alana, and you know me, I'm like, oh, it was a great call. She was amazing. I love talking to her. I don't think anything of it, right? Alana is a woman of her word. Again, doesn't know me from Adam. 3 weeks later, 3 to 4 weeks later, I get a call from her and she says, Jocelyn, I don't know if you've heard of this company called DraftKings, but would you be interested in serving on their board? And so I kind of laughed and I was like, Alana, is this a joke? It's like, of course I know DraftKings. I sat across the table from their CEO when I was at the league and I know him. And she's like, oh, well, they have this amazing board opportunity and we're going to put your name for it. We think it would be great. And so the rest is history. I'm on that board. It's the first board I joined. I've been on for over 3 years. It is by far one of the best experiences of my life being on that board.
Okay. So can I ask a small detail?
Of course. Yes.
When you transitioned from the Hill, you met with a lawyer to help negotiate. When you first sat on your board, were you going back and seeking legal counsel? And
yes.
Okay.
Yes. So my lawyer, his name is Bill Reynolds. I'm going to give him a shout out too. He negotiates all of my contracts. He sees everything, anything that I'm signing, anything that I'm negotiating, he sees all of it. And is that, you know, he's really the right hand that helps me make sure that I'm, you know, getting my value.
Okay.
And it's reflected in everything I do. But yes, for a board contract, let me tell you something about boards. So this is where I'm going to get really real with the audience.
Oh, please.
Oh my goodness. You have to be prepared, not just with a lawyer, you have to be prepared with an accountant. Because one of the things I learned serving on boards, now keep in mind, my parents both served in the government. My mom retired after 20 years. My dad worked a little bit longer than that. We don't live in an age where we can retire after 20 years, right? But I didn't know about boards. I had very little information going into serving on DraftKings. But thankfully, DraftKings has a really good collegial infrastructure. So my fellow board members have been great. And I ask questions and I get the information and I'm not shy. You may have picked that up. So I get information that I need. But my attorney was instrumental because what I didn't know, when you get equity shares in a company and they vest, man, that tax bill is quite a surprise. So my accounting team help me like figure it, like there are so many different things that you have to know, and having been on the finance committee. I didn't know any of it. And I felt like, I was like, how do I not know this? So I learned it along the way. And so now I know all the things that you have to do from a accounting perspective, a tax perspective, a good governance perspective as a board member, what type of insurance you have to have, all of that, because I have a great accountant and a great attorney.
So you are sitting on the board of DraftKings. Does this start opening other doors for you? And so this is where I really want to start honing in on this idea of sitting on a board, creating networks, because even if my goals or ambitions don't map exactly to that, I can create a microcosm in different levels of community to do the same thing. So I just want to look at the overall model. What are you doing? What information do you know? Who are you reaching out to? Absolutely. So we can start duplicating that.
The overall model is, you know, every relationship is meaningful, right? And you never know when a conversation that you had a year ago, a week ago, 2 minutes ago, even this conversation that you and I have, it's because of the relationship I have with Susan, right?
Right.
And that you have with Susan, she's brought us together and we're going to create even more networking and opportunities for women. So I would say to the audience, no matter where you are, what community, what industry you are in, relationships, right? Don't let any relationship, don't leave it to chance, right? Take those opportunities. I am constantly meeting people, and it can be someone. So my brother told me this story. This is a good story. He just told me this yesterday. So my sister was in Chile. She was there working, and my brother and sister speak Portuguese and Spanish, me English only, because I took Latin and do well on the SAT. Go figure. Not a smart move, but over the
I think you're doing okay, honey. I think you're doing okay. Well. Just kill Latin, baby.
Well, I needed to do well on the SAT. So those two, Portuguese and Spanish. So she was in Chile. He had to go over and meet her there. And so when he went over, they met this young man, like for, it was like 10 minutes. They met this guy for 10 minutes, like, and they were, you know, connections. Last week, this young man, so he's moved to Atlanta. He moved to Atlanta at some point at the end of last year.
And he's Chilean?
He's Chilean.
Okay.
Moved to Atlanta. My brother's a pastor. He shows up at my brother's church and they have, my brother's like, oh my gosh, wait, we only, like, I remember you. We met for 10 minutes, 10 minutes. So the young man is now, he's flipping houses, doing all this stuff, but now is going to likely join my brother's church and they're back in connection. 10 minutes. This young man, new to Atlanta, doesn't have family in Atlanta. We will be his surrogate family because of that 10 minute meeting, right? So it doesn't matter. Do not leave any relationship. It could be 1 minute, 2 minute, 10 minutes. And you never know when that person is going to either come back into your orbit, advocate on your behalf, be your sponsor. You just never know. And so the relationships that we have, big, small, everything in between, they all matter.
I love this. So on the note of relationships, you're on the board of at DraftKings, how do you start getting on the other boards?
Oh my goodness. So, well, multiple opportunities. The other board was...
Oh, I'm sorry, but real quick.
Yes.
You're getting on other boards and you're also starting your own business.
Yes.
Okay, so then can you now share the story? Because girl, last night I was on this roller coaster of, I was like, so she must never sleep. She's part vampire.
I do sleep.
And you have cute, two amazing dogs.
I do.
And you have beautiful homes. Oh, and so... I want to make sure that we're making sure that we're also incorporating the fact that it's not just board life. Yes. This is business life and this is your life. Yes. So right now in this story, this is where I really want to go, like, go a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
So from DraftKings, now let's open up this new chapter.
Yeah. So the consulting, that was really just an outward expression of what I've always been doing, like starting my own business. But I've always been a people, I don't know if you call it people whisperer, but certainly a strategist and advisor. So if you think about the work in the Senate, advising senators on how to get legislation done, how to, you know, cut deals and all of that. So it's just, it's always what I've done. And now I have a business doing it. But that's not my only business. So I do lots of things. And my goal is to follow my passion. So real estate is another passion. I don't just have a bunch of, or I don't have real estate for the fun of it. It is a passion project, but it's also how you can build generational wealth.
Yes.
My mom was a realtor on the side. So my mom, I learned very early on to have a side hustle. So she worked for the government. She was also a realtor. She was an accountant with the government, but she did all these other things. So I could see, you know, she modeled for me some of the things that I do in my life. So yes, I'm in the real estate space. I'm a producer. I produced a Broadway play with my producing partner, and that's a relationship that came about because I'm on the board of DraftKings. So that was an introduction. Mm. We met at a dinner randomly. We had a conversation about our shared love of the arts. He calls me months later and says, I remember that conversation. His name is Scott Delman. I'm going to give him his flowers as well. One of my favorite
girl, you better be
people.
Having you better be having some garden in the
say,
back.
I
you
am. I know. I am.
I love it.
But these are all extraordinary people.
Yes. They've
been part of my story, and I yes. just love them so much. And Scott calls. He was in London, and he calls, and he's like, so I remember our conversation. I have this opportunity. I'm going to invest in a play called The Piano Lesson. Samuel L. Jackson originated it on Broadway 30 years ago. He's coming back. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to be my producing partner. And I'm like, wait, what? Is that even a question? This is like the DraftKings question. Is that even a question? Yes, is the answer. And he taught me the ropes. So the other thing I would say to the audience, in everything, I'm constantly learning. So there is nothing that I do where I'm not learning something, taking some lesson from it and applying it to my life in some way. DraftKings, I mean, you have, as I said, the titans of industry that sit on that board. And I've been able to sit and listen and hear how they think about things, how they approach business, you know, some of the opportunities that they participate in. And it's opened up a huge new world for me that I otherwise would not have accessed. And I would say I'm on the board of Omaze because the CEO of DraftKings recommended me for that board. So that's how that opportunity, and again, not a guarantee. I still have to go in and interview and convince them that I'm a good fit.
Right.
But that recommendation, it meant something pretty significant when one CEO says to another, hey, Jocelyn's on our board and has done a terrific job. We think she'd be great for your board because you too are in an entertainment and media, highly regulated space. And so that's how that opportunity came about.
So it sounds like boards are created by way of recommendation. Are there any people who lobby to get on boards or jostle to get on boards?
Yes. So boards are created several ways. So there are search firms, executive search firms that really, you know, find people for boards. So boards will hire those firms to find people for them. But the most likely pathway to getting on a board are the networks and the relationships, which is why we have to make sure that networks are broader, that they're more inclusive, because I didn't go to Harvard. I didn't go to Princeton. I went to the University of Florida. And again, go Gators, and we have an amazing network. But sometimes these are closed-loop systems, right?
Right.
And we really have to work to open them. And I'll say, the CEO of DraftKings, Jason Robbins, has been a leader in the space. So when I joined the board of DraftKings, Valerie Mosley, another Black woman, also joined at the same time, which is unheard of, really, right? We're still in an era where you may have a woman, definitely unlikely to be a woman of color. You certainly don't have two women. We have three women on the board of DraftKings. Marnie Walden is also on our board. So I feel like we are in a space that is leading and will continue to lead. The same is true with OppFi. There are two women on the board, and it's really earth-shattering. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be groundbreaking and earth-shattering, but it is.
So you have people who are making introductions. I did a little bit of research, and you really believe in helping other people as well. And so in what ways? So somebody's listening is just like, well, I need a Jocelyn in my life.
Oh, you can call me.
Be careful.
I mean, I want people to reach out. Sure.
So how does somebody go out and actively start networking with somebody who would be able to open doors and has different accessibility?
Again, LinkedIn. So I try to respond to anyone who reaches out to me on LinkedIn is likely to get a response. It may take me a little while. So it's not immediate, like the same day, but I try to respond. And I do have a lot of folks who reach out and say, I want to be on a board, or I'm in a career transition. And how did you do X? Or I want to get in sports and entertainment. How did you make that transition from public policy to sports? And so I, you know, reach out to the people that you want to talk to. And they will respond. LinkedIn, again, I guarantee you people will respond. But even if it's not LinkedIn, I often say to folks, how are you leveraging your current network? So forget about the new networks that you want to establish.
Right.
So even if you don't know
me, here.
How are you leveraging your current network? So what networks am I talking about? If you went to, you know, you can leverage your network, even going back to high school, because there are people in high school that, you know, are doing amazing things. And I leverage that network. I leverage my college network, as you hear me say over and over again, because I love that place, dear place in my heart. I leverage my network from the Hill. And so every network that we have, you know, again, don't take those opportunities for granted, and don't assume that everyone has a network. everyone. Mm-hmm. And so when you look down that list, so if I'm looking down the list of graduates from my high school, again, amazing things. I ran into one recently when I was back home in Atlanta who's leading Habitat for Humanity, right?
Oh, wow.
Again, that's an amazing network. So I would encourage folks, don't wait. You don't have to create something new in order to have the network that you need. So look around you, figure out who the people are. First, define what it is you're trying to do.
Right.
Figure out who the people are in your existing networks who can help you with that. Hmm. And if there aren't people in your existing networks, or just because, you can create new networks, but be strategic about it.
So very basic question. When you say leverage your network, you look at people you went to college with, you look at people you went to high school with, you look at people in your church community, or your synagogue, or your mosque,
absolutely,
or the PTA.
Yes.
And so are you looking at, I mean, I'm talking about, like, let's get granular. Are you looking at a list of names and then Googling them?
Or, so it's different for me because I'll try to give a real world example. So
yeah.
I reach out to people on LinkedIn all the time, like I said. So
okay,
if there's something I'm interested in, so for example, in real estate, so there's something I'm trying to do in real estate right now. There's a woman on LinkedIn, there was a Business Insider article written about her, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is the person that I need to contact because she's already done what I'm trying to do. I don't
so
know
So you're
her.
Reading Business
this
Insider.
This is consuming enormous amounts of information, and so I see there's this woman who's doing something in real estate that I need help with. So I'm reaching out to her.
On LinkedIn?
Yes. Yes. And then if I can't find her on LinkedIn, like, you know how to go to the message and you find the email.
Yes.
I'll email the person. Yeah. I have no fear. And I think no one should. I mean, that's, people are on there for professional connections, but you can do the same on Instagram. You can do the same
right.
on Facebook.
Right.
So because I have so many ways that I'm getting information, I always see, well, this would be an interesting opportunity. Why don't I talk to this person? The other thing, let's talk about new networks. So I may have been in Vegas a week or so ago. I was at the airport on a connecting flight. I'm standing by this gentleman and I go to him and I was like, hey, is this seat taken? Because he's standing right by the seat and I want to sit down. He's like, no, it isn't. I was like, hey, are you going to Super Bowl? So we strike up a conversation. This guy, his name is Dexter, awesome, just met him. He's like, hey, wait a minute. I remember you. Didn't you work at the NFL? Because I told him my name was Jocelyn. He's like, yes, I know you. And I was rooting for you
Wait.
In that job. This is what he says. And he's like, I'm in DC. I worked on the Hill too. This is literally what he says. And so you never know. Like, I didn't know that when I spoke to him and said, hey, are you? I just struck up a conversation. And so there are people all around us who can be part of our journey. And so he and I, he's also in construction. He does a lot of other stuff. But I'm like, I need to talk to you about this. So again, don't leave it to chance. Don't take no relationship for granted because they can all, and I don't mean this in a transactional, self-serving way.
Right, right.
Dexter, you know, while I was in Vegas, like he came along to all the things and he was in my network because I just met him at the airport, right? So however I could be helpful to him, you want to do this, you want to do that, let's see if we can make it happen.
Okay, I'm like, I have like so many thoughts right now. Are you an extrovert?
Well, in some instances I am. Sometimes I am. I'm more of an introvert, but I become extroverted in certain moments. That's what
because
I've learned.
It's just so funny. When
yeah.
I map, so what happens is the human psyche, we learn the most by storytelling.
Yeah.
So by you putting all of us at JFK Airport and asking Dexter, is that seat taken? We are either in your shoes asking, or we are either Dexter listening, or we're watching from the outside it happening. However, yeah. somebody's going to insert themselves in the story. And so I am watching this go down. And if I was in your shoes, I would not ask if the chair was taken. I would go two terminals down and sit in the empty one by myself until they were about to board. And so I actively take myself out of
wow.
conversations.
Wow.
That's how much of an introvert I am. So I think to myself, I'm probably robbing myself of opportunities, but how do I still stay true? Like, even if yeah. I did ask Dexter, is that seat taken? I probably would be like, I'm gonna open my extra thick book and be like, I am riveted
by this
page. How do I make myself, because if I genuinely want to start seeing the world in the beauty of humanity
sure.
and believe
sure.
that people want to help me or make a connection.
It's what you and I are doing here now, right? you believe in this connection. I just met you, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's like I had like the FBI voucher. Like Susan's like the FBI of human capital and intelligence. You know, like her EQ radar is so high that I don't have to second guess. And so like it's same, not really.
I think we have to approach every person with grace and as if like just how we would want people to see us. That's how I see people. Plus, I come from a big family. So there's never not a moment when we're not talking. And, you know, I have a dad who's never met a stranger. So I think we've all picked up a little bit of that. Okay. And there are my moments when I'm more introverted than extroverted. But yeah, I'm probably, I'm an extroverted introvert is how it's, yes. So I think that's right. But no, you just, I don't know. It never occurred to me to not talk to him.
So somebody who's listening and who is probably hardwired a little bit more like introvert, like myself, what is one thing that you tell yourself? Like, do you shift modes? Like at the airport, were you in possibly an outgoing introvert mode or were you in introvert mode or how do you flip between?
I was just in fun mode, like, right?
Okay.
And I was just ready.
I'm going to Vegas mode.
I'm going to Vegas. Okay. And I actually saw another friend who I've known for a number of years at the same airport. It was a layover flight into Minnesota. Minnesota of all places is where the layover was. But at that point, everybody's going to Vegas, right? The flight's going to Vegas. So I'm there and I don't, you know, again, it was just a person standing there who I thought might have been using the seat. But then when I turned and talked to him about it, friendly face, and I was like, hey, are you, and he had to be going to the Super Bowl. What are the odds that he isn't? Had to be going to the Super Bowl, looked like he was going to the Super Bowl. I think may have been wearing team jersey. And so it never occurred to me not to talk to him and just say, hey, who are you going for? What team? Like, you know, are you meeting friends there? Like all that. That's the conversation that we had. The friend he was meeting is someone that I know from Washington. She leads the Black Mayors Association. Her name is Phyllis. That's who he was meeting. And I was like, oh my gosh, small world.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, much like your dad, I don't think you've ever met a stranger. I happen just to only meet strangers because my family makes fun of me because I put my head down and I just go. I don't give opportunities for kismet moments.
We have to give opportunities for kismet because of the state of the world that we live in. And this is where I lead, as Susan would say, with my heart. If we don't have conversations, part of the reason I left the Hill when I did is because it had become so polarizing. You couldn't have, if I said the sky was blue, someone else would say the sky is red, and then they'd be personally offended that I said the sky is blue. We've got to get to a place in our country and in our livelihoods where this isn't like, yes, we need to have more personal connection. We have to give people grace. And that starts with conversation about moments of places of commonality. So Dexter, I didn't know Dexter from John, Joe, Jim, Adam, anybody. But when I asked him, was the seat taken? And I said, hey, are you going to the Super Bowl? We immediately had a connection. He was going to the Super Bowl too. Mm. And that conversation expanded to, well, are you meeting friends? Well, I'm meeting friends. Well, as it turns out, your friend is my friend. Had we not engaged, I would have never known that. I wouldn't have had the benefit of his company and that of his extended network in Vegas. And we wouldn't be connected now, which we are. So I would just say to everyone, step outside of the comfort zone, whatever it is. And it's easy to say, hi, how's your day going? Right? Mm-hmm. Just starting with hi, how are you? Even if that person says, you know what? I've had a crappy time at the airport today. They lost my luggage. Well, I'm sure you've had an experience where your luggage has been lost. And maybe you can offer some, you know, consolation or something to that person. So starting with hi, you know, there's not a wrong way to go if you start with hello.
The humanity of connection.
Yeah.
So we started off the conversation by really dismantling and unveiling what a board is and what it does and your path, albeit a little untraditional. And the reason I loved it so much was because you now get to make the circle bigger. Absolutely. And you get to advocate and encourage and make connections for other people.
Yes.
And then we broke down the ideology of how you make connections. And it was so simple. Like it was silly. It was like, girl, be friendly. Be friendly, like restore the humanity and have conversations, even if you don't see eye to eye. So we go back to this idea that not everybody on the Hill saw eye to eye, but your goal then was to create, like, let's both get to yes.
That's
and you do that
yes.
by inviting conversations and invitations. Yeah, and so
absolutely.
As people want to connect with you and as they want to go deeper and as they want to root for your journey and see you on more boards, but then also see you advocate for other people who are underrepresented on boards, where do they go to connect with you?
Oh my goodness, LinkedIn. Big shout out to LinkedIn. They should, I don't know. I should be a spokesperson for LinkedIn.
I know.
But I mean it. It's such a democratization and access to amazing people. That's one way. Intro, I'm on Intro. So I'd encourage people yes. who want to connect to find me there. And then I have a website, jocelynmmoore.com. You can also find me there. And if you don't hear from me, just give me a little bit of time. I will get back to everyone.
We'll make sure and we'll link everything in the show notes.
Yes, please do.
Specifically your email address as you go on and build your businesses and multiple properties and sit on boards and change the world. And, you know, I'm just going to go buy blackunicorn.com right now and then sell it back to you at a profit.
You all, look at you. Hey, I love that. Hey, I mean, always the business
mind. Come on, let's go. Let's
always
go.
A hustler. I love it.
Y'all, thank you for watching and listening to the Jasmine Star Show. Be sure just to drop Jocelyn a little note on LinkedIn saying you loved it and you listen to it. And may we all remember that we have the opportunity to create a connection as long as we leave ourselves open. I am saying I'm the first to learn it and be committed to it. Thank you for listening to the Jasmine Star Show. If you like and love, please leave a review. It has a massive impact on the show. I read every single one of them. I hope you have a blessed day.